My name is Frank, a recovering compulsive reader, and I'm going to start by just telling my history. My history is pretty long. I came into OA in August of 1979, and I had my top weight. Well, I'll go into my weights. My weights were over 400 pounds before the program, and I came into the program about 360 pounds. I got initial abstinence and lost all my excess weight, got down to my goal weight of 200 pounds in 1 year. And I stayed near there for about 8 more years near that goal weight. And then I went into a long period of alternating relapse recovery. The only problem is I gained more weight in the relapse periods than I lost in the recovery periods. And I might have spent equal time of that 18 years in relapse and equal time in recovery, but it kept going back and forth between them. And I got to a higher top weight during the relapse period. I got up to 460 pounds in my relapse. And then 20 years ago, it's now 20, a little over 20 years ago, I decided to go to the Region 2 convention that year. And because I'd avoided going to the conventions or anything because I had gained all this weight back and I didn't want anybody to see me. So I went to the Region 2 convention. So before I went there, I decided to go to a meeting a day. So I went to a meeting a day for the week before the convention. And then I got a lot of energy out of going to the convention. I met my old friends that I hadn't seen for a long time because I stopped going to the conventions and things like that. Then I started on my current abstinence back then. And at that time, I was at 400 pounds. I was at 400 pounds exactly, more or less. And got down to my goal weight now in about 2 years from that time. And I've been within striking range of my goal weight. I don't have a real strict goal weight that I have to be exactly at or anything, but I just try to not let my weight get any higher than I am right now, basically. So that's my overall history, just in terms of numbers. I came into the program as an absolute. Oh, and I should actually show you pictures to prove it. And I don't have pictures from before OA because we didn't have digital cameras back then, but I have pictures from my relapse. So these are all pictures from my relapse. I'll go back to the first page in case you didn't see them there. So that's what it was like in relapse. So my history is I came into OA as an absolute atheist. I could prove that God didn't exist. I was desperate because I'd become friends with this woman at work. And then for a little while, it was more than friends. And then she wanted to go back to just being friends. And I thought if I could lose all this weight, I would, you know, she would keep me as a romantic relationship. So I was desperate for that. And luckily, there was no internet, because if I had looked up Overeaters Anonymous, I wouldn't be here today. All I had was a phone. So what I did was I called the local medical clinic and I asked them if they had any weight loss program or anything like that. They said, oh, a therapist had given a talk here recently. So they gave me his name and number. I called him. He said he would take me as a client, but I have to go to Overeaters Anonymous meeting simultaneously. So I looked in the phone book because I didn't have an internet and I got the phone number out of the phone book. I called the number. I asked them where there was a meeting. They told me there was a meeting on Wednesday at noon on the Stanford campus. So I went to that meeting not knowing anything at all about OA. And I'm very glad that I didn't, because I wouldn't have come here if I knew it was a spiritual program, because I was an absolute atheist. I could prove that God didn't exist. I wasn't just agnostic. I was an atheist. So I got to that first meeting and then they started talking about God and they let me crosstalk. It was a small meeting, like four people plus me. And they let me crosstalk and I asked, how can an atheist work this program? And they tried to answer all my questions. And somebody at that meeting loaned me the AA big book. And they said, read the chapter, We Agnostics. That might help you. So I took the big book home. I read that chapter. And then I was convinced this program was not for me, because the only message that I got from that chapter was, if you stick with us, we will convert you. And I didn't want to be converted. I was very happy in my atheism. Thank you. And science explained everything. I didn't need any God to explain anything at all. But I went back to that second meeting the next week because I had to return the big book that they had loaned me. If they gave it to me as a gift, I might not be here right now. And the person that loaned me the big book wasn't even there the next week, but I went back anyway. And I was a little more desperate to listen to them when they just said I didn't need to believe in a traditional higher power. And so I decided to just, at that point, that was the same meeting on Wednesday at noon. That night, I decided to go to the much bigger meeting down in San Jose that night. And that's where I got the hope I needed, because at that meeting, a man stood up and said that he had lost over 100 pounds and kept it off for years. And that's what gave me the hope that this program could work for me. And the only thing I had to do was just ignore that God part. So I treated OA as a weight loss program for the first 6 months in this program. I got a food sponsor because he would help me with my food. And my food plan was very simple: count calories, and I wanted to be under 1,500 calories every day. And for 1,500 calories for a 400-pound person, you lose weight pretty rapidly. So about 6 months into the program, I'd lost, I don't know, 80 pounds or 100 pounds, something like that. And at that point, somebody who I'd become friends with, a guy that I'd become friends with in the program, I went to about two or three meetings a week, but I was treating it just as a diet club and a weight loss club, and ignored that spiritual stuff they kept talking about. But this man volunteered to be my sponsor, and I said, okay. So he took me for the first step. There was no problem with that. Then the second step, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore me to sanity. That I couldn't go along with. I couldn't believe that a power greater than myself could restore my sanity. So the thing he asked me to do is just act as if, pretend that I believe in a higher power, and like say the serenity prayer. And what I found is that it worked. If I said the serenity prayer, I usually got serenity. And and so that was, prayer works. If it helps you, then it's a good thing to do, is to pray. So I did pray, and I started working the program, the spiritual, the 12 steps of the program. I admitted that there's a possibility that there was a higher power, and I went through a lot of different research on, what I could use as my higher power. I went through a lot of research on spirituality and things like that. And what I finally came up with after some period of time was what I call my higher self, my higher power. The way I look about myself right now is that there's Frank, the addict, the compulsive overeater, who is powerless over food and his life is unmanageable, and he wants everybody and everything to do exactly what he wants to do when he wants them to do it. And that's the Frank, that's the addict. And that's the Frank that's talking to you right now. This Frank is that addict Frank. However, I believe that there's a higher self within me, the God part within me. It's my God isn't out there and creating the universe. The God is within my brain, and it's kind of helping me to accept the world the way it is. That's the thing that God does for me. Accept the world the way it is, instead of the way that Frank wants it to be. I mean, Frank wants everybody to do what Frank wants them to do right now, and Frank wants to get everything that Frank wants to get right now, and that's not going to happen. So there's a part of me that's the spiritual part of me, which is the part that can accept the world exactly the way it is, and that's what I think spirituality is for me. It's accepting the world the way it is. So that's what I use as my higher power, and I've used it ever since then, and it works just fine for me. You don't everybody, that's the good thing about this program. We don't have any dogma about what you must believe in order to be in this program. I don't have a list of beliefs that I have to have. I still consider myself a spiritual atheist, but I worked this program and I worked the steps a number of times over the years. What my history before OA is that I didn't know that I was overweight at all until seventh grade, when my dad mentioned that as I was reaching for a second helping of something on the dinner table, he said, "If you stay at this weight, you'd be okay." I didn't realize I wasn't okay at this weight. I guess I was chunky there. I don't know exactly what I was. But then the next year, it was definitely obvious, because in eighth grade, all the boys called me Hippo. So I had the nickname of Hippo, and I hated that. Luckily, that name didn't stick with me in high school, and I went off and then off to college and things like that. So that was my upbringing. I was brought up in a religion. In fact, I was an altar boy, to tell you what religion I was in. And but I abandoned that in high school. I went to a Catholic high school. A friend of mine and I sat down on our break, on our lunch periods, and figured out the proofs that God didn't exist. We went through all the proofs that God exists that are listed in the spiritual books, and there were flaws in every one of them. So we basically converted ourselves to atheists in this Catholic high school. But anyway, I told you how I got into OA. I told you how I lost the weight the first time, and then I got into the relapse again, and it was about equal time in relapse and recovery. And then in 2006 is when I started my current abstinence, and I've been abstinent since then. Let me talk more about, let's see, I got some notes here. So in terms of spirituality, part of spirituality is to pray, and I don't do big long prayers or anything like that, but I do short prayers, more like one of my favorite short prayers: more God, less Frank. Because if I have more God in my life, I accept life the way it is. If I have less Frank in my life, I'm not as selfish and self-centered, and I'm able to accept the life the way it is. Trust and relax is another saying that I use to try to as a prayer as a trust and relax. And another prayer is, for example, God, thank you for the opportunity to practice my patience. because I need a lot of practice on patience. I can be a very impatient person. I can want things to happen when I want them to happen, the way I want them to happen. So I need every opportunity I can to practice my patience. Another short one is, "Thy will be done." That's all I have to say. "Thy will be done," or "I am not in charge." And one of them I think I really need to do more often is, "God, please make my character defects glaringly obvious to me before I act on them. I frequently am acting on my character defect of selfishness, self-centeredness, criticism, whatever I'm doing, and hurting other people's feelings. And if I can become aware that I'm about to do that, that would be the best way of having a spiritual awakening, if I could become aware of my character defects before I act on them." Now, over the years, when I first came into the program, I didn't do any meditation, but when I was in the program, I took one of those commercial meditation classes, and I, did quite a bit of time doing that commercial meditation. And I think that's very helpful. Again, this is part of quieting down that frank voice in my head. I mean, it never goes away. Even when I'm in meditation, my thoughts will come in. But the idea is that meditation is, the thoughts come in, and then you let them pass, instead of grabbing onto them and then, working everything you can out of it, figuring out, what you should do and what you shouldn't do, and what happened to you and why that shouldn't have happened, and all that stuff. So meditation is a way to recognize that thought in my head, which is not my higher power. The thought in my head is frank. So the thought in my head is the problem. It's not the solution. I can't think my way out of this disease. So meditation is a way of getting in touch with that non-thought part of me, the part of me that just experiences the world the way it is. You could almost say that experience itself, just plain pure experience, is kind of part of my higher power. It's because it's experience accepts the world the way it is. I don't see the world differently with my eyes because I want it to be different than the way it is. My eyes accept the world the way it is. My ears accept the sound that comes in the way it is. I can't change what I'm seeing. I can't change what I'm hearing. So it's a way of accepting the world. And that's what meditation helps me to do, is to get in touch with my senses and my acceptance of the world the way it is. So I don't have a real regular meditation schedule now, but I do it as best I can. And then some other topics I like to talk about a lot is from page 62, selfishness, self-centeredness. That we think is the root of our problems. And I really am convinced that selfishness, self-centeredness is the root of all my problems. Because all of my other character defects are rooted in that. They can all be derived from that. "Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. The compulsive reader is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we compulsive eaters must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible, and there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid." So this is from the reading, was from page 62 of the Big Book, and I translated it into OA instead of in Alcoholics Anonymous. But the point of this is that we're powerless over our selfishness and self-centered just as much as we're powerless over our food, and only God can help us with both of them, both my selfishness, self-centeredness, and with my food. So there, that's one of the things that I use a lot. I use as often as I can. I don't do anything as often as I should, but I do it as often as I can. And there was a meeting some time ago, about maybe 10 years ago, where somebody read up and stood up and read this "Am I Selfish" quiz that they had heard at some other meeting. So this came from OA, and I call it the "Am I Selfish" quiz. And the first four stanzas that I'm going to read to you are the first four stanzas that I heard at that meeting, and they really impacted me. As soon as they said it, I wrote it down, and I talked to the person afterwards. And so I wrote down what they had, and then over the years, I've added three more stanzas to it. So here's the "Am I Selfish" quiz, and I'll post this in the chat so you can see it. It's not official OA literature, but it came from an OA meeting, and then I added my OA ideas to it also. The "Am I Selfish" quiz: "If I'm resentful, it's because someone did not do what I wanted them to do in the past. They did not do it my way, and that is being selfish. If I am angry, it's because someone is not doing what I want them to do right now. They are not doing it my way, and that is being selfish. If I am fearful, it's because someone will not do what I want them to do in the past, in the future. They will not do what I want them to do in the future. They will not do it my way, and that is being selfish. If I'm guilty or remorseful, it's because I got my way at your expense, and that is being selfish. If I feel jealous or envious, it's because someone has something I want, and I want it now, and that is being selfish. If I feel self-pity, I excessively worry about my own troubles, and that is being selfish. And I'll post that in the chat so you don't have to try to make notes or anything. But that really is, to me, is explaining that selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of the problem, and that the spiritual program that we have here is the only solution. There isn't any other solution that I know of that can help us with that. And, you know, and to do that spiritual part of the program, we have to go to meetings and do all the other things that people do. The other topic I like to talk about is step 10. And I like step 10 out of the big book, and page 84 of the big book. And it's, there's only in the middle of that, there's one paragraph that talks about step 10. And it's only the middle part of that paragraph is what's the root of step 10. And this is a paraphrase of that, the middle part of that paragraph. It says, continue to watch for, was I selfish, dishonest, resentful, or afraid? Now, doing that is like doing step 4. Was I selfish, dishonest, resentful, or afraid? And then it says, God, please remove the defect at once. That's like doing step 6 and 7. I discuss this with someone immediately. That's like doing step 5. If I've harmed anyone, I make amends quickly. That's step 8 and step 9. I turn my thoughts to someone else to help. That's step 12. Then it ends with love and tolerance of others is our code. What step 10 is doing all 12 steps on the spot on whatever character defect that came up. Now, I'd like to tell you that I do lots and lots of step 10 steps, and I don't. I am blind and oblivious to my 10 step needs a lot of the time, and I occasionally do them. So but I want to do them more. That's my goal, is not to do what I'm doing right now. And then I'm going to end with a few sayings that I like. Compulsive overeating is a disease that tells me I don't have a disease. The disease tells me that if a little bit is good, then a whole lot is better. It's a disease of more. A compulsive overeater will eat over anything, everything, or nothing. Surrender means you don't have to argue with reality anymore. Resentment is taking poison and hoping it kills the other person. The resentment only hurts me. It doesn't hurt the other person I'm resenting. And here's one that's especially true for me. I am addicted to being right, but being right just means I agree with myself. You know, I wish I had the absolute truth, but I don't. I just agree with myself. Pain doesn't come from the surrender or acceptance. It comes from the resistance. Thinking is not a tool of the program. You know, read the tools. There's no tool in there called thinking. Thinking is what gets me into trouble. It's not what's going to get me out of trouble. One day at a time became one moment at a time. I can't outsmart the disease. It's using the same brain I am using. I can't do that. An addict alone in his head is in a bad neighborhood. Anyway, so that's my sayings. And I've got 30 seconds left, and I think I'll just return those to the meeting and say thank you for inviting me to share.